Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. You know that feeling, right? The constant rush, maybe information overload, that sense that, well, even when you're achieving things, something's missing.
Yeah, like you're on a treadmill.
Exactly. And maybe you've wished for, I don't know, a shortcut. Something to find a bit of inner peace, maybe some purpose in all the noise. Well, if that sounds familiar, you're definitely in the right place. Because today, we're diving deep into a book that really tackles this head on. Think Like a Monk by Jay Shetty.
That's right. And we're going to explore how this ancient wisdom from monks isn't just some old philosophy locked away somewhere. Shetty argues it's actually, you know, super practical for how we live right now.
So our mission today really is to unpack how Shetty, who interestingly used to be a monk himself before becoming this, well, global figure, how he connects those timeless ideas with the stuff we deal with every day.
Exactly. And look, this isn't about trying to get you to, you know, shave your head and wear robes at all. It's about adopting what he calls a monk mindset, finding clarity, maybe easing some suffering, discovering what actually drives you your purpose. And we'll pull this straight from Shetty's own experiences and the framework he lays out. It's about finding that meaning and peace within our busy lives.
Okay, so let's step back a bit. Before we get into the real meat of the book's ideas, who is Jay Shetty? You mentioned he was a monk, but what gives him the sort of authority to talk about this?
Well, he's got a pretty unique story. He's British, an author, does storytelling, has a massive podcast, coaches people on finding purpose. But yeah, the core thing is his background.
Sure.
He grew up in North London, studied behavioral science, and was honestly on a very standard path, you know, towards a corporate career, the expected thing.
Like a lot of us.
Yeah, exactly. But then when he was about 18, he met a monk, Garganga Das. And it was, by his account, a really profound encounter. Hearing this monk talk about service and inner peace just completely shifted his perspective.
So he didn't just like read a book about it. He actually went for it.
Oh, completely. He made this, you know, really unconventional choice. He spent 3 years living as a Vedic monk in ashrams, mostly in India.
Wow. 3 years.
Yeah. Intense self-discipline, meditation, mindfulness, studying ancient texts, the whole immersive experience. And that's what makes him different, I think.
So how did that lead to, well, this book and his current work?
Well, when he came back to London, his friends, the ones still in the corporate world, dealing with all the stress and maybe feeling a bit lost, they saw this change in him. They started asking him for advice, you know, how to handle stress, how to find more meaning.
Ah, okay. So that sparked something.
Precisely. He realized that was his new purpose, to kind of translate that deep ancient wisdom into something accessible for everyone else. He's lived in both worlds, you see, the fast-paced corporate life and the quiet, contemplative monk life.
That makes him a pretty unique bridge then.
Totally. He can translate these sometimes abstract ideas into like actual steps people can take. And that's why his videos went viral, why his podcast on purpose is so huge. He connects.
Okay, that makes sense. So boiling it down, what's the absolute core message of Think Like a Monk? What's he really arguing here?
Fundamentally, he's saying that the wisdom, the habits, the whole mindset that monks have cultivated for centuries, it's not just for them. It's not some exclusive club.
Right.
It's actually available and really useful for anyone who wants a life with more meaning, more peace, more purpose. Right here, right now.
So it directly addresses that feeling of dissatisfaction or stress we talked about.
Exactly. He's saying we can train our minds. We can learn to handle negativity better. We can figure out our purpose. We can build better relationships. It's trainable.
Right.
And the big shift, the core insight, is moving away from needing external validation, you know, likes, promotions, what other people think, and finding our stability and direction inside.
Internal clarity instead of external reaction.
You got it. Finding happiness by shifting your perspective, not necessarily waiting for your circumstances to be perfect. Because let's face it, when are they ever perfect?
Never.
Right.
Right. And I heard the book itself is structured like, well, like a journey following a monk's path.
Yeah, it's quite clever. It's in three main parts. Let go, grow, and give.
Okay, let go, grow, give.
Let go is about cleaning house internally, shedding the stuff that holds you back, negative thoughts, fears, external pressures. He calls it subtraction.
Getting rid of the clutter first. Makes sense.
Then grow is the building phase, cultivating good habits, understanding your mind, finding your purpose, your dharma, he calls it. This was where you build your intentional life.
The how-to part.
Pretty much. And finally, give. This is about shifting your focus outwards, finding real fulfillment through gratitude, connection, and serving others, moving beyond just self-help to, like, world help, in a way.
And who's this actually for? Is it for spiritual people? People in crisis?
Honestly, it feels really broad. Anyone who feels a bit overwhelmed, maybe disconnected, or just, you know, thinks there must be more to life than the conventional definition of success. Anyone looking for deeper meaning.
Which is probably a lot of people.
I think so, yeah.
But this is where it gets really juicy then. Let's unpack these three stages. Starting with let go. What's involved in clearing that clutter?
Right. Part one, let go. He kicks off with identity, asking that big question, who am I? And he points out how often we define ourselves by external stuff, our job title, how much money we make, our social media profile.
Guilty as charged.
We all do it.
Yeah.
But he says that creates a really fragile identity, right? Because those things can change. Monks, on the other hand, build their identity on internal values, compassion, honesty, service, things they control.
So borrowed identity versus true identity.
Exactly. He talks about doing a values audit to figure out what truly matters to you, separate from what the world tells you should matter. He uses this great metaphor.
Oh, yeah.
He says, your identity is a mirror covered with dust. The more you wipe away the dust, the more you see your true reflection.
Ah, I like that. Simple but powerful. What's the hardest dust to wipe away, though, for most people?
Good question. I think he implies it's that deep need for external validation. The likes, the praise, the approval. Letting go of that is tough.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, what else is in let go?
Next up is negativity. He calls it the devil's voice, which is dramatic but kind of fitting.
Ah.
He acknowledges our brains have this built-in negativity bias. We tend to focus on the bad stuff. But crucially, he says we don't have to be controlled by it. And he gives this super practical technique. Spot, stop, swap.
Spot, stop, swap. Okay, break that down.
So first, spot the negative thought when it pops up. Just notice it. Become aware of it without judging yourself for having it.
Yeah, awareness first.
Then stop. Literally pause. Maybe take a breath. Question the thought. Is it actually true? Is it helpful?
Interrupt the pattern.
Exactly. And finally, swap. Consciously replace that negative thought with something more balanced, more objective, or even positive. It's not about pretending everything's amazing, but about choosing a more constructive perspective. Actively curating your mental diet, he calls it.
That sounds doable, but maybe hard to remember in the moment when you're actually feeling stressed or down.
Absolutely. That's the challenge. He really emphasizes that it's a practice, like building a muscle. You have to keep doing it consciously until it becomes more of a reflex. Consistency is key.
Right. Practice. Okay. What else are we letting go of?
Then there's fear. Shetty calls this one the evil queen.
Okay. Sticking with the dramatic labels.
He does have a flair for it. But his point is that a lot of our fear comes from attachment, being attached to specific outcomes, to people staying the same, to keeping our possessions.
Mm-hmm. Fear of loss, fear of change.
Right. And the monk's antidote isn't necessarily bravery in the way we usually think of it, but detachment.
Okay, detachment. That word sometimes sounds a bit cold, though, like not caring.
That's a common misconception, and he tackles it directly. Detachment isn't indifference. It's not not caring. It's caring deeply, putting in the effort, but releasing your tight grip on the outcome, understanding you can't control everything.
Ah, okay. So wanting something, working for it, but not letting your happiness depend entirely on getting that exact result.
Precisely. He distinguishes between a healthy desire and an unhealthy, fearful attachment. When you loosen that grip, fear loses a lot of its power. It's about releasing the need for things to be exactly a certain way.
That's a subtle but important shift. Okay, is there one more in let go?
Yes. The last one is intention, the motivation of a monk. He observes that monks act with a very clear, pure intention, usually service or spiritual growth.
Whereas we?
Well, often in modern life, we focus so much on the what, the goal, the task, that we forget to check in with the why. What's our actual motivation? Is it coming from a place of service, love, growth? Or is it rooted in fear, ego, greed?
And why does that matter so much?
Because, he argues, an intention rooted in something positive, like service or growth, brings a sense of fulfillment regardless of whether you hit the exact target. But if your intention is based on fear or ego, even achieving the goal might feel hollow. The why fuels the journey.
Okay, that really sets the stage. So once we've done some of that clearing out, we move into part two. Grow cultivating purpose. This sounds like the active building part. Where does he start?
He starts with the big one. Purpose? We were all meant for something, is how he frames it. And he introduces this concept of dharma.
Dharma. I've heard that word. What does it mean in this context?
He presents it as your unique purpose, your calling, your unique way of contributing to the world. It's not some rigid destiny, but something you actively uncover. And he offers that very helpful Venn diagram to figure it out.
Right. The three circles. Remind me what they are.
Okay. So imagine three overlapping circles. One is, what are you good at? Your skills, your expertise.
Okay.
The second is, what do you love? Your passions, what genuinely excites you.
Got it.
And the third, crucially, is what does the world need? Where can you be useful? Where can you serve?
And the sweet spot in the middle.
That overlap where your skills meet your passion, meet the world's needs. That's your dharma. It's a really practical way to think about finding work or a path that feels truly meaningful beyond just a paycheck. It requires some real self-reflection, though.
Definitely. But finding that dharma is one thing. Actually pursuing it takes discipline,
yeah,
right? And a lot of us, myself included, struggle with willpower.
He totally gets that, which leads him to routine and this amazing phrase, location has energy, time has memory.
Ooh, intriguing. What does that mean?
He basically says relying purely on willpower is exhausting and frankly often fails because willpower runs out. Monks aren't superheroes of willpower. They're masters of routine.
Ah, so the routine does the heavy lifting.
Exactly. Location has an energy means setting aside specific places for specific activities, like maybe your desk is only for focused work, not browsing social media. That space builds an association with focus.
Okay, environment matters.
And time has a memory means doing the same important things at the same time each day, like meditating first thing in the morning or exercising at lunch. Over time, your body and mind just expect it. It becomes almost automatic.
So you're designing your day to support your goals rather than just fighting your urges all the time.
Precisely. He strongly advises designing morning and evening routines to set yourself up for success. It puts the good habits on autopilot, freeing up that precious mental energy for other things. It's a shift away from that hustle harder mentality.
That feels revolutionary, actually. Less struggle, more structure. Okay, what else is in Grove?
Next is the mind, and he uses this fantastic analogy, the charioteer.
The charioteer. Okay, explain.
It's an old Vedic image. Picture a chariot. The five horses pulling it are your five senses always wanting to run off in different directions towards sights, sounds, tastes.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
The reins controlling the horses. That's your mind. The charioteer holding the reins. That's your intellect, your wisdom. And the passenger inside the chariot. That's your true self, your soul.
Okay, I'm with you.
So if the charioteer, your intellect, isn't trained and focused, those horses, the senses, directed by the untrained mind, will just drag you all over the place. Chaos.
Total chaos.
Monks train the charioteer, the intellect, to firmly guide the mind, the reins, and thus direct the senses, the horses, and things like mindfulness and meditation. That's the training. It's practical training for the charioteer to get control, to steer your life intentionally instead of being pulled around by every whim and distraction.
That's such a clear visual. It really makes sense of why practices like meditation are so central. Okay, one more in Grow.
Yep, the final one is ego. He calls it the stick that is taller than you.
Huh, another good one. What's the distinction he makes here? Because some ego seems necessary.
Right. He differentiates healthy self-esteem from destructive ego. Ego, he says, is competitive, it's defensive, it's always comparing, and it desperately needs external validation to feel okay.
Like keeping score all the time.
Exactly. Whereas true confidence comes from self-knowledge, from knowing your values, from humility. Monks actively cultivate humility, often through acts of service.
So how do we tame the ego, especially when the world seems to reward the loudest voice?
He offers practical strategies, things like practicing genuine gratitude for what others do, actively asking for and listening to feedback even when it's hard, and learning to truly celebrate other people's successes without feeling diminished yourself. Basically, growth happens when we can step outside our own ego. And that focus on others leads perfectly into the final section, part three. Give the joy of connection and service. This is where it all comes together, moving outwards.
Okay, so we've let go, we've grown, now we give. What does that look like?
He starts with gratitude, but takes it deeper. He calls it the world's most powerful drug. Not just saying thanks, but cultivating a deep state of appreciation.
More than just a gratitude journal.
Oh, yeah. He sees it as a powerful antidote to so much modern angst, anxiety, envy, that feeling of never having enough. He even mentions the science, how it can literally rewire your brain for more happiness.
So how do we practice it more deeply?
He suggests things beyond just listing stuff, like writing genuine gratitude letters to people, doing a gratitude meditation where you really sit with the feeling, or just consciously taking moments to appreciate the small everyday things, the miracles we usually ignore. The goal is to shift your whole lens on life towards appreciation.
Actively cultivating that grateful state. Okay, what's next in give?
Then comes relationships. Okay. And his advice here is quite pointed. Watch people, not movies.
Meaning?
Yeah.
Be more present with real people.
Exactly. Invest your energy in your relationships with the same kind of intention you might put into your career or a big project. He talks about creating a circle of trust, being conscious about who you let close and why.
Being intentional with our social energy.
Yes. And emphasizing that love isn't just a feeling, it's a verb. It takes effort, empathy, deep listening, really trying to understand the other person, not just waiting for your turn to talk. Building connections based on shared values and supporting each other's growth rather than just convenience or surface level stuff.
That's a challenge in our distracted world. Put the phone away, actually listen.
It's crucial, he argues, and that leads to the absolute culmination of the book, Service, or Seva, as it's called in Sanskrit. His chapter title says it all. To serve is the highest joy.
So all the self-improvement leads outward.
That's his ultimate point. The whole reason to let go and grow isn't just for your own benefit. It's to become better equipped to contribute to serve others. He argues that this is the most direct path to lasting fulfillment and joy because it takes you completely outside your own ego.
Does it have to be like volunteering at a soup kitchen?
Mm.
Or big scale stuff?
Not necessarily. He stresses that service can be big or small. Grand gestures are great, but so are daily acts of kindness. Offering your skills to help someone, just being there for people. It's about finding ways to use your unique dharma, that thing you discovered in the grow phase, to make a positive difference, however small it seems.
So the journey is really a cycle. Let go, grow, and then give back, which probably helps you let go and grow even more.
You nailed it. That's the flow he describes. It's a continuous loop towards a more meaningful life.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot to absorb. If we had to pull out, say, the biggest overarching themes from all this, what would they be? What are the main threads connecting let go, grow, and give?
Okay, yeah, let's synthesize. I think the first big one is simply that the monk mindset is a trainable skill. Peace, focus, compassion. These aren't magical gifts some people have and others don't. They're abilities you develop with practice, like going to a mental gym.
That's really empowering, isn't it? Knowing it's learnable.
Totally. Second, the huge emphasis on internal validation over external approval. Finding your sense of worth inside, based on your values, your character, your purpose, rather than constantly seeking it from outside sources like status or likes or other people's opinions. That feels incredibly relevant today.
Especially with social media constantly feeding that comparison.
Yeah, certainly. Third, his specific approach to purpose, dharma, as the intersection of passion, skill, and service. It's more concrete than just follow your bliss. It gives you a map. Find what you're good at, what you love, and D, how it can help others. That combo is key.
Right. The service element makes it more than just self-indulgence.
Hmm. Fourth, and this one really struck me too, is achieving discipline through routine, not willpower. That idea of structuring your environment and schedule so positive habits become easier, almost automatic. It really challenges that just try harder mentality.
Yeah, that one's a game changer. Less battling yourself, more building supportive systems.
And finally, number five, that service, Seva, is the ultimate source of fulfillment. The whole journey isn't just about becoming a better you. It's about becoming a better you so you can give more effectively to the world. That outward turn is where the deepest, most lasting joy is found, according to Shetty.
Those are really powerful takeaways. And the book itself, it sounds like it's packed with memorable lines or ideas that kind of encapsulate these themes.
Oh, definitely. He has a real knack for coining these sticky phrases, like that metaphor we mentioned. Your identity is a mirror covered with dust. The more you wipe away the dust, the more you see your true reflection. It just perfectly captures that process of shedding external labels to find your core self.
Yeah, that one stays with you.
And the super practical one, spot, stop, swap. This is the meditative process of mindfulness in action. It takes mindfulness from being this vague concept to a concrete three-step tool you can use anytime, anywhere.
Makes it instantly usable. I like that.
Right. And then there's the distinction he makes. The highest purpose is to live in service. Your passion is for you. Your purpose is for others. Your passion makes you happy, but your purpose makes you and others happy. That really clarifies the difference and elevates service.
Passion versus purpose. That's a really useful distinction. Purpose involves others.
Exactly. And one more that's quite profound. The quality of your life is determined by the quality of the questions you ask yourself. It puts the power back in our hands, encouraging us to move beyond surface worries and ask deeper, more intentional questions about our lives, our values, our direction. Okay, so this all sounds great, inspiring even, but the big question always is, how do we actually do this? How do we bring this monk mindset into our messy, busy, everyday lives?
Yeah, the practical application. Let's get into that. How can you actually use these ideas? Well, think about your personal life, that spot, stop, swap technique. You can literally use that the next time you feel a wave of anxiety or start beating yourself up about something. In traffic, waiting in line, scrolling through Instagram, just spot, stop, swap.
Interrupting those automatic negative loops.
Exactly. Or the morning routine idea. It doesn't have to be an hour long. Maybe just start with 5 minutes. Instead of grabbing your phone first thing, maybe spend 5 minutes just thinking about one thing you're grateful for or setting a simple intention for the day, like, I'll be patient today. That small shift can really change the tone of your whole day.
Those small hinges swing big doors, right?
That's the idea. Now, think about professional life, that Dharma Venn diagram. Use it. Look at your current job. Is it hitting those three circles, good at, love, world, needs? Maybe not perfectly, but is it moving in that direction? It can be a great tool for evaluating your career path or even making small shifts within your current role to make it more meaningful.
Finding purpose even within an existing job.
Right. Or when things get stressful at work, deadlines, difficult colleagues, whatever. Remember the Cherry 2 analogy. Instead of instantly reacting with frustration or anger, can you pause, take a breath, that's the intellect taking the reins, and choose a more considered response. It's about managing your internal state first.
That pause makes all the difference between reacting and responding.
Totally. And then in our relationships, practicing intentional listening, we mentioned it, but it's huge. Next time you're talking with a loved one, really try to put distractions away. Listen to understand their perspective, their feelings, not just to formulate your reply while they're still talking.
Easier said than done sometimes.
Oh, for sure. It takes practice. And actively expressing gratitude, not just feeling it. A specific thank you, a genuine compliment, offering a small act of service for someone you care about. These things build connection way more than we often realize. You know, digging into this, what really landed for me personally was that idea about discipline coming from routine, not willpower. I always felt like I just needed more self-control, and it felt like a constant struggle. Reframing it as building supportive structures, designing my day, that feels way more achievable and less like a personal failing when I slip up.
Yeah, it shifts it from a moral battle to a design problem in a way.
Exactly. It makes this whole idea of transformation feel less daunting, more practical. Like, okay, I can actually build these habits piece by piece, even with everything else going on.
For me, the biggest takeaway is just how intentional this path is. Shetty makes it clear that peace, purpose, fulfillment, these aren't things that just happen to you if you're lucky. They're the result of conscious choices, consistent practices, and deliberately training your mind. It's a fundamental shift from just reacting to life as it comes to proactively shaping your inner world and therefore your experience of the outer world.
From reactive to proactive living.
Precisely. It's about taking responsibility for your own mind, your own happiness, armed with these ancient tools adapted for right now. So maybe here's a thought to leave you with. Shetty argues our highest purpose involves giving back. If that's true, consider this. What happens if you seriously try to identify your dharma, that unique blend of what you love, what you're good at, and what the world needs? How might consciously acting on that not just change your own life, but also create positive ripples, maybe in ways you can't even predict right now?
That's a powerful question to ponder. Maybe just pick one thing from our conversation today. Spot, stop, swap, a 5-minute morning intention, intentional listening, and see how applying it feels this week. See what shifts, even in a small way. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.